this is The Thing About Cars. I am Mickey Desai. We have a full house around our table today. Don, are you with us?
I am present.
And Dave?
Present and accounted for.
And Ben?
Yeah, I'm with us.
And Becca?
I'm over here.
Special guest for the day is Jim. Jim, welcome to the table. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Excellent. I can't wait to ask some questions of you and learn more about your history and desire or desires around cars. First, I think we're going to do a moment of Grand Trivia Auto and ask our question for the day. This is a technical question. In fact, I may ask two questions today. I know we sometimes do that, but this one question is a fairly straight shot question. So I might just get it out of the way and then ask the real question for the day. The first question I have is, how many control arms are found on a conventional McPherson strut suspension design? And that's referring to one single corner of the car. How many control arms are attached to a McPherson strut? Anybody have that quick and dirty answer?
To a single corner?
Yes, to a single corner.
We're not going to wait till the end? Okay.
No, usually one.
Well, that's what I was thinking. We're not counting other things, just simply the one control arm, right?
That's exactly right. So it is one control arm that is found on a McPherson strut. That's exactly right. Ben, can you tell us why they do it that way? Is there a rationale?
Well, I would have researched it if I'd seen this coming, but because basically the strut comprises both the spring and the damper.
Right.
So all you really need is something at the other end, you know, down at the bottom to locate, you know, your wheel upright.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So let's do our actual Grand Trivia Auto question for the day.
Okay. Here it comes.
Yeah, here it comes. So all Nissan Xterras have an asymmetrical tailgate design with a protruding bump. What is stored in that bump? Is it a first aid kit, a Camelback water supply, a fold-out porta potty, or a lunchbox? Do I need to read those answers again?
Where's my option for the folding shovel to hide the bodies?
That's not in there.
So,
yeah, go ahead and read them again.
Okay, so what's that asymmetrical bump protruding out from the back of a Nissan Xterra? Is it a lunchbox, a fold-out porta-potty, a Camelback water supply, or a first aid kit? And we'll answer that question at the end of the show. Let's right now do Ben's segment called That New Car Smell. Ben, what do you got?
Well, for the inaugural edition of this segment, I'm actually going to start on a bit of a cynical note. Apologies to everybody who's expecting more excitement than that, but it'll get better. The cynical note being that the new car scene to me is a bit depressing right now. I was looking not only at what's new, but also at what's being discontinued. And, you know, it's just a whole lot of, you know, trucks and SUVs kind of comprising everything. That's what's new for the most part. Nothing that really gets me going, at least nothing we haven't already, you know, spoken about at great length here. I mean, we all know about the Bronco, the Corvette, and of course that Mach-E electric Mustang SUV that's coming along. Yes, I know, Becca. But like the Mach-E and the Bronco, neither one is actually out yet. At least I haven't seen them driving around anywhere, so we don't know much about them. The C8. We'll devote some future attention to that. I want to get in touch with some people who've put a few miles on it.
I had touched on that briefly way back when, that because of the pandemic situation, while the Broncos' debut was public, they weren't going to be hitting the dealerships until next year sometime.
Right, right. But things that are going away, I mean, there are two Lincoln sedans going away, Cadillac sedan going away, a whole lot of, you know, kind of other more mundane things. Chevy Impala is going away. That makes me a little bit sad.
Really?
Because, yeah, I've driven a few of those on my business trips. And, well, it's not that exciting. It's a good, solid car that does what it does very well and good tall guy ergonomics. I can say the same thing for the Dodge Caravan, which has been a surprisingly, you know, enjoyable vehicle on some of my trips. In fact, I had one just this past week that I put about 1,500 miles on. You know, it's not a car you want to take up to the mountains and do twisty roads with. It's not a sports car, but
wow.
If you want to get from
it, you can fit a lot of stuff in that thing.
Yes, you get from it. Yeah, I mean, I had no problem doing 1,500 miles in the thing. It was comfortable and easy to use. You know, it was user friendly in every way. And it's going away because they want to focus more on the Pacifica, which of course costs more. On a more exciting discontinuations, the Alfa Romeo 4C is going away. They sold a whopping 71 of them last year.
What?
Yeah. And 144 the year before that.
Huh.
Oh, there was another sports car I saw that's going away.
Oh, it's the BMW i8, right?
Yeah, that's going away too, which doesn't surprise me.
No, if Ronnie were here, he would say, thank goodness.
Yeah, well, I think the i8 was a little bit premature. I don't think it was really developed as well as it could have been. Of course, there are some BMWs that are on the way that I've seen that, you know, we've had our discussions about those horrible mega grills. They now have a new grill design that I think is even worse. It's big and they're both halves are kind of octagonal looking and no, thank you.
Isn't that Civic? The Civic's gone away?
Well, yeah, not every Civic, but the two-door Civic is going away, and so is the SI.
That just surprises the heck out of me. I don't understand.
As far as the Civic goes, that's the cutest car. I'm not a Honda fan, but I'd rather have a coupe than anything else. Like, why would you us drive it?
And the SI was, you know, fabulous bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a sporty Civic after, you know, 2020, your only real option is the Type R, which is, you know, more money and more commitment. It's not as much a sporty regular car as much as the bones of a regular car that have had something a bit sportier and a bit less compromising built around them.
So Ben, this is a silly question on my part because I know the answer, but I have to ask it for the sake of the conversation. Is the new car environment depressing because of everything that's being discontinued, or is there some other reason? Because I mean, on the one hand, in my own cynical moments, I say to myself, well, I don't like change because I'm getting old. But then, you know, if we're an actual car executive, would I be standing behind Honda's desk saying, okay, that's a good idea to get rid of the SI?
Depends on what kind of executive you are. If you're a bean counter, yeah, you're probably, you know, backing that decision up. Cause that's the other thing. I mean, these car companies are businesses. Their goal is to make a profit, return on investment, shareholder value, all that jazz. But that said, the whole scene, the reason I find it all so depressing is it seems like just another step in this, you know, long march toward homogeneity.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, yeah, it's like you'll have cars in a class and they'll be very lookalikes, and then another class car and not all this diversity.
You know, how many more, you know, SUVs and crossovers, you know, can we, I mean, how many do we need, first of all?
Right.
How many variations on that theme do we need?
Yeah, it's rather saturated. Well,
I think also one of the things that you've got impacting it is the market dynamics, because I remember reading this great article in Forbes somewhere a year ago talking about how much the car companies are struggling in selling to millennials and Gen Z because they don't have the same passion for cars that boomers or Gen X did. And actually a lot of them would just rather not own one. And so now you come into, okay, that even further constrains things like, you know, coupes there or things that run different from generic automobiles.
Well, Jim, true.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, I feel like David took exactly what I was going to say, which is that I work with Gen Zers and millennials, and there just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of interest in them to understand cars the way that they work. People just don't get excited about cars anymore. And if that's the case, differentiation is going to suffer.
Yeah. Well, those folks are not the entire market either, though.
No, but they're the consumers that are coming down, figuratively down the road, no pun intended. they can't keep selling to us forever because we have an expiration date on us.
No,
well,
but
let's put a damper on things, hasn't it?
Well, this is super dark, over depressing. That's for sure.
On the other hand, though, some of those slightly older segments still have a lot of buying power. And if they want to take that buying power to, you know, the used market instead of the new market, then, that's probably what'll.
I was going to wonder about that, Ben. Do you think prices for things like the SI and the Impala, that somebody is, you know, aftermarket or sitting in their cars, sitting in their garage, what do you think the prices are going to look like?
That's a really good question, because they all dangle that starting MSRP in front of you, but you know, right, we all know that nobody actually pays that.
Right.
Every vehicle out there comes, you know, packaged up in some way or another. you know, like in fact, right in front of me here is the Chevrolet Trailblazer, starting MSRP 19,000. I guarantee you nobody gets one for under 25.
Right. Well, yeah, and so, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't the first rule of marketing never alienate your audience?
You would think.
The first rule of marketing is never lose money.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true.
So, I'm curious, which one of these cars, Ben, for you is a loss?
Oh, well, I think the 4C is kind of a loss. I mean, I'm not as warm to it as some other things, but it was cool. It was a little different. It was fun. Mm-hmm. You know, the Lincolns, I think, are a little bit of a loss. Granted, they had very little appeal in the market, but they had flavor.
Lincoln Continental's a huge loss. Mr. Yeah. Big has no car to drive in now. I'm very sad. I love that Lincoln Continental. It just screams, you know, somebody's driving me around.
Yeah.
To me, it always screamed mafia. So,
well, that too.
Well, Ben, thank you for the segment, that new car smell. We'll look forward to another new car segment from you here in about a month, I guess, if we're sticking to our schedule.
Right on.
So thank you. The next segment we've got is I want to talk to Jim. Jim, you said something about being the most corrupt professor on Georgia Tech's campus. What's that?
You know, I really don't know. The person who said that obviously has never seen the car that I drive, because if I were corrupt, I would definitely drive something much nicer. Uh-huh. But that was just a comment that came on a student evaluation many years ago. Let's just say me teaching statistics is not a good idea.
So I have to ask, what are you driving?
Right now I have a very luxurious 2004 Civic Value Pack four-door, who was it? It was Don, I think, who said, why would you want a, anything other than a coupe? Or was it Becca?
Yeah, that was me.
No, it wasn't me.
The rest of us thought it.
if it had been me, it would have been, why would you want a Honda? So...
So, which leads me to the guest questions I want to ask all of our guests from now on, and we're still whittling away on this list. But Jim, you get to break in this segment for us here. Okay. I've got four questions for you. First of all, what is your dream car?
Well, you know, in life you have different dream cars at different times. You know, when you're young, you're all excited about something really, you know, like a supercar. The first time you see one, it really you know, gets you excited. And of course, you know, I was big into Ferraris. Then in midlife, you're interested in things like, you're moving more into something that is, I don't want to say more practical, but it's like transition. So I think I kind of transitioned into a Nissan GTR, the Skyline GTR, sorry, the last before the Renault, merger, although they go to great pains to say it's not a merger. But now for me, it's pretty much anything that runs. But if I could, maybe a Tesla would be nice, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
No engine noise. That's the downside on that. But, you know, I'd get something to simulate that.
Right. Very cool. Question number two, where is your next road trip?
Wow. Well, with all the excitement going on, we're not road tripping a whole lot of places. My road trips generally consist of, you know, taking the kids to see their grandparents in South Carolina. But if I could, my great dream of a road trip would be to drive the American West. There's a route that goes from New Mexico all the way up to Montana that has no traffic lights on it.
Wow.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
See, I've always wanted to do something similar, go around to the ghost towns out west.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. We've actually done that.
Have you? That just sounds fascinating to do.
It's anything. West is just great car exploration. Yeah. You can't do the West without being in a car.
That's right. Question number three for you, Jim. What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen in someone's garage?
In someone's garage? Oh, wow. Because the original question was what you've seen in someone's house.
Well, you know,
I was going, this is a family show. So anyway.
weirdest thing. Dysfunctional family show.
But we put the fun in dysfunctional.
I had an uncle who had an Isetta. So I do recall seeing that in a garage. And that was, and he was about 6'5". So him fitting into the Isetta was really amazing to watch.
That's funny. That is pretty funny. So yeah, all right. So the original question I'd sent you was, in fact, what's the weirdest thing you've seen in someone's house? What would you have answered for that question?
I don't know that the statute of limitations on that is up. So,
and my last question for you is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Yeah, I'd say it's a sandwich. It's meat between bread. So yeah. I would say, yeah, it's a sandwich. It's like, it's a sausage sandwich. Sure. But is it, the question of course is it two pieces of bread? It's bread that's split down the middle. Does that make
so
it not
many jokes here? My brain is exploding from not making any of
the jokes. And what would the Earl of Sandwich think about that stuff?
Right. He's dead though.
super dead yeah. Dead for several hours.
Right. Well, thank you, Jim. Does anyone have any comments or reactions for Jim on the hot dog issue or anything else that he's mentioned?
Well, I mean, a cheesesteak is the same thing. It's one bread that's sliced down the middle with all the meat inside. So
technically every loaf of bread or every slice of bread starts out as a loaf of bread. So I'm not sure. I don't think you complain that we don't bake individual slices.
We're getting very theoretical here.
Now we're going to try to dip into, you know, what's actually bread. Is a pita a bread? Is a tortilla bread?
All right, these are
angry
questions.
Emails starting now.
may I point out that I'm not actually the one that got us away from cars here?
Right, no, it's my fault. It's my fault. Becca, bring us back. Let's do Becca's segment. Becca's going to do a news segment, which we're going to rename, but for right now, it's called Fix or Repair Daily.
I didn't realize you were there to me yet.
Yeah, it's your turn, Becca. I know the title vexes you, so if anybody has a suggestion on a new segment name for the new segment, please send it into us. Visit our Facebook page or thinkaboutcars.com website and suggest a name, and we may even maybe we should do like a drawing or a prize or something.
That's what I was just thinking as you were starting that. You know, at minimum, definitely people need to let us know what they think would be a better name. I'm sure plenty of people don't realize that the issue, if you've listened long enough.
Yeah.
My love with Mustang, not necessarily Ford, but you know, Mustang, I've heard all of the jokes, and this is definitely a direct stab at my Mustang and the Ford, and I've heard all of them. So yes, right. Definitely. We'll just have to decide if we want to do some sort of drawing or what we want to do with that.
Right. So if anyone does have a suggestion for the name of Becca's news segment, send it in. And at the very least, I've got a Thing About Cars sticker I can give you, and maybe a guest appearance on the show as well. I think that might be fun. I just don't have anything else that I can readily offer as a prize.
We need to brainstorm on that.
Yeah, we'll think about that. In the meantime, like I said, contact us via our Facebook page, The Thing About Cars, or thingaboutcars.com. We have a contact us link there. Becca, please take it away.
Well, the one that I have for you today, I'm just calling Where is Starman, if anybody knows who Starman is. According to carscoops.com, Elon Musk's first generation Tesla Roadster that was launched into space approaches Mars for the first time.
Wow.
The Tesla and its passenger named Starman was launched into space 2.5 years ago on a Falcon Heavy rocket. So I'm sure everybody, you know, probably remembers that. They had some interesting little tidbits in there about various music playing in the Roadster and whatnot. So I'm reading through it. And as they say, I'll go by what they say, on October 8th, they made a, air quote, close approach with Mars. That is 0.05 astronomical units, which is just under 5 million miles. So, you know, that doesn't sound close. But if that doesn't sound close, they are almost 37 million miles away from Earth. So relatively speaking, where they started out at, they are a lot closer to Mars than they are to Earth.
It's my question is it close enough for Matt Damon to grab it as it goes by?
There you go.
What is Matt Damon grabbing it with?
I don't know. He poked a hole in his suit and is flying around like Iron Man, remember?
I'm going to say probably not then.
Has any of us not seen that movie, by the way? Because
I haven't seen the movie, so I'm trying to get the reference.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Big spoiler alert there. But anyway.
No worries. Yeah, no, I'm like,
Don't listen.
No. I take that off my list.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So there is a programmer named Ben Pearson that tracks Starman and his live progression in his Tesla Roadster. He tells Car Scoops that the car is currently 129 million miles from the sun. And this is what concerned me, and moving toward it at the speed of about 13.5, almost 14,000 miles per hour.
Holy mackerel.
So you do the math on that, how many years left Starman and his Tesla has. Yeah. But if anybody's interested in tracking the Tesla and Starman, there is actually a website called Where is Roadster? And it is tracking the progression of where they are floating around out there. Cool. I'm double checking. They're just calling it by name, but I believe it's going to be whereisroadster.com. Hmm. That's what it looks like. Yes. Whereisroadster.com. No spaces, no dashes, no nothing.
Now, I haven't learned a lot about it, but I saw it when it launched and I'm curious, does it have solar panels on it so that things keep.
There was a note about a battery in there and the battery was powering basically like the signal so that it could be tracked. I'm assuming that's what's doing the music. But other than that, I don't think much of anything is really functional.
I mean, is it streaming Sirius or?
So actually it is, if the battery's still working, because I'm on the website, it's basically playing the same track over and over again.
Yes, in one ear and a different track in the other ear. It's the same tracks.
Yeah, so basically, if it's still working, then the Starman has listened to Space Oddity 265,730 times.
Ew.
Well, there was two.
And the other ear is Their Life on Mars. You will have listened to that 358,060 times.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Starman's going to need some help when he gets back to hear both of that at the same time.
Well, boy, listening to Space Oddity that much, he's coming close to my college roommate.
he's definitely probably tired of hearing the same songs over and over again.
Or Starman. I'm wondering, why did they put Starman in a sort of astronaut suit when they could have made him look more like the Stig? I mean, he's not breathing.
But that was one of SpaceX spacesuit prototypes.
Oh.
So the point was, it was more Tesla stuff.
Well, the suit is all white from the looks of it. Mostly.
Yeah, it's close to the Stig.
I'm looking. Yeah, I think he does look quite a bit like the Stig in that. He's wearing a prototype of SpaceX's spacesuit is all they go on to say. It doesn't really have a name.
So will he eventually crash into the sun or be thrown out to a orbit? And
no, I'm too sad to do the math. If you sit there and do it, he's only got a few years. I'm going to be optimistic.
I'm not sure what the original trajectory was. I don't know if he's going to fly out of the solar system or if he'll eventually get pulled into somebody's orbit.
The predictions that I saw was that he was eventually going to either strike Earth's atmosphere or Venus and was going to burn up. And it was more likely Earth than Venus.
That's really? What I was. Yes, exactly. Was he becoming space junk and then he'll just burn up in someone's atmosphere? And
my optimism is hoping that some like meteor, asteroid, whatever comes along and knocks into him and sends him askew and he goes off to some crazy place.
Ooh.
What were we about to say, Jim?
I was going to say that I think that when he gets back into Earth orbit, AAA can come and tow him back.
Well, shall we switch gears and do a little bit of listener mail?
Yeah.
I think
let's
do some listener mail. All right. So I've actually got three questions. I don't know how many we can get to today. Our friend Robert asks a question. He says, why does GM keep canceling highly successful products like the EV1? It's gone. Saturn's unique union agreement. It's gone. The Volt? It's gone. What gives?
Where to start with GM?
Well, my first question is not just GM. I think everybody's guilty of doing this kind of thing lately, but go ahead, please.
Well, you know, one of the things, and growing up in a GM town, this is heresy for me to say, but I was never much of a GM fan. Trust me, everyone who I'm related to in Dayton, Ohio is lining up to send negative emails right now.
See, that's what I always have to watch. My family is all American Auto, and I have to be careful.
Yeah. So, and my father was a Ford man, so you know that we were, you know, so we were the redheaded stepchildren in the city of Dayton. But you know, the thing with GM, not a big fan of the cars, not a big fan of the business strategy, but this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Their new CEO, Mary Barra, is someone who's really kind of impressive. And the bankruptcy and the rebuilding of the company, she's a really good, assertive CEO. And it's really coming down to bottom line. If a product line or is not making money, they're not spending the time to try to save it and honor tradition, if you will. They're like they're pulling engineers off those products to put them on building something new, and they're really doubling down on both EVs and autonomous vehicles because that's what they think the future is, especially for millennials who don't want cars anyhow.
Right. So wait, Dave, you're saying that she's simply not interested in fixing anything, right? She's not interested in tweaking to improve performance. She's just, you know, the surgeon who's going to eliminate the thing and
she's
work on what's
working.
She's not
using her heart. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's maybe a harsher way than I would say it, but she's a good business strategist. And she's right. Like, you know,
Saturn's demise was before her time, as I recall, but
2009.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of those divisions they killed in the recession, and it was ripe for being plucked because, you know, Saturn had pretty much lost its way by then.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the EV1 happened even before that.
Right. And it, you know, I think the EV1 was one of those things that was just kind of sort of a showcase product, but also one that in a subtle way was designed to kill appeal for electric cars.
You know, I wonder, because there's this resulting documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car? It's all about the EV1, and it does, I think, a pretty good job of raising the question, who killed the electric car? Was it the consumer? Was it the company? Was it the law in California? Who was it?
We need to write our own song then. It was Who Killed the Electric Car instead of the radio star.
Can I be a Robert Palmer dancing girl in the background?
Definitely.
It's like, Mickey killed the EV1.
Yeah. But what about, was it Jim that was saying that he was professor of statistics?
No, I work at the business school, but I taught statistics for a short period of time. And after that, that was when I got the eval that said I was the most corrupt researcher.
Well, statistics go very far in business and making decisions on that when you're not using your heart, you're using business models. Statistics and probabilities and trends go a long, long way in making these types of decisions.
Yes, they do, Becca. And actually, I'm teaching statistics at Georgia State. So this week is on causality and correlation. And I think there is a lot of probability factors in everything.
Yep. Please teach a lot of people that. You'd be surprised how many people don't believe in cause and effect.
Or they correlate too much as cause effect.
Yeah.
So let's do our second question here while we still have a little bit of time left. Not that I don't want to derail a statistical conversation, but to get us back to the world of cars. Eric asks, he says, why do people find leather superior to modern fabrics for seats? Modern fabrics are more comfortable, more durable, and softer.
So is he meaning microfibers?
I'm not sure exactly what he's referring to, but I think in general, he is right. The world of textiles has advanced quite a bit, and leather in the long run really isn't as comfortable as some of the other stuff that's out there. It's certainly a lot harder to maintain than some of the other stuff that's out there.
Right. Well, there's a little hair splitting there too, though, because most of the leather going into cars now is not even real leather.
Right.
Sure.
I would like to answer this as the parent of twin boys. Now, I'm sure that there are high-end cars with fancy fabric that has fancy treatment on the seats that makes them more waterproof and stain resistant and all that. But when it comes to maintenance, and let me tell you, you cannot guess the things that kids can do to car seats until you have kids do them. I still have not found anything quite as resilient as leather, as long as you are conditioning it that way when the big wad of gummy bears melts and sticks the car seat to the leather. It's easier to take it apart and you only damage the car seat and not the seat of the car. Fabric, even with various like Scotch Guard and things, has not stood up as well to their testing. So that's my big thing. And I mean, you're right, especially in Georgia, things like leather and vinyl, and oh my God, do not get on those seats in Georgia summer.
Right.
You know,
walk out with a second degree burn on your thighs.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Fabric is, you know, tends to be softer and not give you third degree burns.
So we're not quite disagreeing with Eric. I mean, we're all sort of individually saying that other stuff is superior to leather in some ways.
But as a parent, I look for the leather just because I have seen the chaos that they have inflicted on my vehicles.
Sure.
But does anything except for leather and leather can rip and tear too, but I feel like fabrics, you snag them and you got snags all over your seat. I had the last material car that I had, it just, when you got out, it seemed like that part of the seat was constantly being snagged. This, you know, whether passenger or driver, it's that area that you're moving in and out of constantly gets rips and tears in it.
Which sort of lends its notion to that fabric is then therefore easier to replace. Leather's super expensive to get reupholstered and repaired, but if I have to repair or replace a cloth seat cover, that's quicker and cheaper.
I never really had the snag problem. I've had a lot of, you know, cloth seated cars, and honestly, right, never had that big an issue with them.
But I would think also, I'm getting this from clothing, if you ever get what we just refer to as a pull in like a shirt or a sweater or something, there's a tool where you can go in from the underside and pull that back through the fabric. And I'm thinking you got to be able to use that with a car seat too, right? Maybe there's an easy repair for the snags.
Can I put on my business school hat for a second and answer what I think?
Oh, of course.
Sure. Come on.
I think it's a brand equity. I think that leather has built up a brand because it was superior to the things that you highlighted, vinyl and plastic and the early fabrics, for such a long period of time. People have a tendency to prefer leather because they have always liked leather because it's always been available. And the new fabrics are having a hard time achieving recognition. Who other than total car nuts go out there and look at the covering on the seat? I don't think most people are looking at that. I think it's just kind of like, it's become common knowledge that you should go for the leather seats, even if that's not necessarily true anymore.
Interesting.
Oh, and Don, you know what you need to say here, right?
No, what?
The rich Corinthian leather.
I was going to do that, darn it, you bitch! I was waiting. I know, I was going to say, it's all Ricardo Montalban and the rich Corinthian leather.
I was trying to poke. I thought it would be in your brain. I was trying to poke.
And then I got sidetracked.
Oh. Oh, no.
I know, my Cordoba.
There was a period in college when I was much thinner that I could really rock a pair of leather pants.
Yeah.
Until my roommate started referring to me as, you know, essentially rich Cordobian, you know, leather seats. That's a hard nickname.
Corinthian leather. It's Corinthian in the Cordoba.
There you go.
Well, now if I try to rock leather pants, I look more like a Chesterfield sofa.
Well, it didn't happen unless there's pictures. So pictures, please.
Right. All right. Maybe.
So, all right, Eric, next question.
Eric, I hope that answers your question. The third question we have is, Aaron asks, why isn't there an attractive SUV, or any SUV for that matter, that has sliding doors?
I think there is. I think that Grand Wagoneer, the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, has sliding doors. I think a Tahoe can come with sliding doors. I think it's just super expensive. And anybody that's ever had a family member with a disability, you can retrofit those things to sliding doors so you can get a ramp in.
But now that we mention it, I don't know that I've actually seen an SUV of any kind that actually has a sliding door on it. You've mentioned two, but I personally have not seen them.
I've seen the Grand Wagoneer. It's pretty, it's pretty slick looking. You don't even know there's sliding. And then how do we really define an SUV besides what the companies call an SUV?
Right.
Because honestly, the Dodge Grand Caravan that's going out has a sliding, and it could be a really low level, either a hybrid or a crossover But I think it's more of an SUV.
Well, I always did the difference as being what was, you know, the chassis. If it's a truck chassis, it's an SUV. If it's a car chassis, it's
Do you know how many trucks are not on truck chassis anymore?
No, I haven't actually looked lately. No.
That one I'll have to look up for you, because there are an awful lot of trucks are not even on truck chassis anymore. And I'm looking at the Grand Wagoneer and I'm not seeing any sliding doors anywhere.
Huh. I think again, it was a special order.
It looks like it might have been. There's some pretty that ones.
Trim along the top of the windows is where the track is hidden. And it's probably only that track. There may be something hidden that as the door moves over the rear wheel that you're not seeing, instead of a lower track like on a van.
But right.
Coming back to the original question, I think minivan stigma is part of it.
It could be. But I think
because how many doors... people come into a dealer and say, I want something that'll haul my whole family, the dog, and the bicycles that isn't a minivan? Right. It happens every damn day.
Well, I think minivans are sexy. I mean, you still have the option of sliding open the door and pretending like you're part of the A team.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, honey.
Plus, there was a great sidebar article in Road and Track several months ago where, you know, they were at some Sebring or someplace like that, you know, doing a compare with all these sports cars. And they had this sidebar about how the unsung hero of a lot of those, articles and such as they do is a Dodge Caravan that they use for photography as well as just as a gopher vehicle for, you know, anything they need while they're out there doing their thing. But, you know, they will do that. They'll slide those doors open and have a photographer in there shooting through that big open side door.
Right.
The van's going around the track next to the Corvette or Ferrari or whatever. And that photographer's in there just like a helicopter, you know, gunner with his camera just snapping away.
Oh, yeah. Remember when a number of NASCAR tracks were offering driver experiences and they'd put you in with a professional driver in a Chevy Lumina and drive you around the track at 120 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Don just sent us all a screenshot. You might have heard the camera click a second ago. And it's certainly a Grand Wagoneer with what appears to be a sliding door. It's in fact, it looks kind of cool.
It does look kind of cool. And it's pretty. Yeah. I mean, it's got like a rose gold or gold grill on it. And
our last listener thing is actually from me. Did you guys notice that Jalopnik might be going away? The website, the blog, auto blog website,
really?
Jalopnik? Yeah.
Hadn't heard this.
Apparently they've had serious staffing issues in the last 6 months. They've had a mass exodus of their major editors and writers. So it is possible that Jalopnik won't be around for 2021.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Well, there's a much deeper story that I don't know if we're going to be able to delve into in the time we have left today, but the parent company of the website, there was a buyout and apparently that had something to do with it. Some of the major writers have gone over to something called The Drive. So there's going to be something called The Drive coming out, but Jalopnik appears to be on its last legs.
So. You know, you don't hear a lot of people use the word jalopy anymore.
I have one friend who consistently refers to her car as the hoopty.
Oh yeah, I've heard that one.
But all right, that's it for the listener viewer mail segment. Does anyone else have anything over that we should talk about before we finish this episode and do Grand Trivia Auto?
I got nothing.
In that case, let's wrap the show. It's time for the answer to our question, Grand Trivia Auto question. The question was, all Nissan Xterras have an asymmetrical tailgate design with a protruding bump. What is in that bump? Is it a Camelback water supply? Is it a first aid kit? Is it a fold-out porta potty? Or is it a lunchbox? Jim, you want to go first?
Sure. Do I admit to the fact that I've cheated during this episode and actually looked up the answer?
You are corrupt, sir.
You know, that's, brownie points for telling
the truth. That is an unspoken rule. We do not Google.
So Jim will deliver the answer at the end. In that case, okay, he knows it already.
Yeah. But what should I tell you what I thought it was before you?
No.
You've been corrupted.
Okay. Well, because before you gave the choices, I thought it was something completely. I thought it was the space for the jack, but
right. Okay. So no, save the answer. I'll let you divulge the answer at the engine. Becca, what's in that bump?
Garth. I can't just stop laughing. I was leaning towards the first aid kit.
First aid kit. Ben, what's in that bump?
I was kind of leaning toward a first aid kit too.
David, what do you think?
I was leaning towards the first aid kit.
And Dawn?
Oh, I'm going to be a contrarian. I'm going to say the lunchbox.
The lunchbox. Jim, tell us what it is.
The consensus has it was a first aid kit.
That's correct. They put a first aid kit. In fact, some of the first Pathfinders had a similar, Nissan Pathfinders had a similar asymmetrical thing with the built-in first aid kit. So that's correct. Good job.
I mean, it would make total sense, but it would be funnier if it was one of these other three choices.
Yeah. Okay. Again, pulling out the mom of twin boys. I would love it if it was a urinal. It would make road trips so much easier.
So much easier.
The thing is when you're a boy, the world is your urinal.
Your urinal. That's what I was going to say.
But they're afraid to pee along the sides of a highway. So.
All right. To our listeners.
Well, you know what?
Oh, sorry, Ben.
The Honda Odyssey, some of them have a built-in vacuum cleaner. If you really are that bent, you could use that vacuum cleaner hose and pretend you're peeing on the space station.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. Actually, Ben, I went a little more of a reasonable route, and I went to the camping supply store and got some of the little portable handheld things.
Yeah.
But I'm very concerned.
I'm thinking using that vacuum cleaner hose is just a shortcut to a 911 call.
Probably. Well, probably.
I'm thinking the vacuum is electrical. You're spraying water into.
I know. There's all kind of visual. Really bad acidic things that I'm thinking.
It's time to wrap the episode. To our listener, please don't do anything lascivious with that vacuum cleaner and a Honda Odyssey. Please don't do that. And if you have any listener questions for us or comments or viewer mail that we can discuss on the show, please give us a call or not a call, but drop us a line via our Facebook page. Just search for The Thing About Cars on Facebook or go to our website. That's thethingaboutcars.com and contact us there. Usually we get back to you pretty quick. We'd love to have your questions and feedback on the show. Or maybe even if you'd like to appear as a guest, please join us. We would welcome that for sure. In the meantime, we all hope you and yours are staying safe out there in this weird, crazy pandemic world. Be careful. We'll see you again with another episode in about a week. Bye.
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 Later.
Good driving.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.